Morning. If you would, open up your Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. We're going to continue our study through the book of 1 Corinthians. Those of you that weren't here last Sunday evening, we continued on with 1 Corinthians chapter 8. So if you didn't have a chance to hear that lesson, it's available on the website. Very glad to see everyone this morning, especially glad to have those of you that are visiting with us. As we have said throughout the series, we are going through it step by step, covering every part of this. And in chapter 8, what we discussed last week was the discussion Paul had concerning the eating of meats offered to idols. And the bottom line was that he did not want them to do anything that was going to put a stumbling block in front of someone who was weak. And that they needed to be mindful of the effect that they had on others. And so in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, we see really a continuation of this discussion, and that Paul is going to talk about our rights and what's involved in defending our rights. And so in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul defends his rights, and he talks about giving up some of his rights and shows how he does that in the way that he lives. And he becomes an example for us in how we deal with the church and with the world. Several years ago, there was a public library in a certain town that had a service called Dial a Tale. And so what would happen is that when a young child wanted to hear a fairy tale, he could call the number, or she could call the number, and listen to a pre-recorded reading of a short fairy tale. Unfortunately, the phone number was only one digit different from the home of a minister named Tom Erickson. And because the children often made the mistake in dialing the number, he would get frequent calls from a child looking for a fairy tale. And he had several unsuccessful attempts to explain to the children that they had dialed a wrong number. He felt like he only had one alternative. He obtained a copy of The Three Little Pigs, and he said it by the phone. And so whenever a child called the number, he simply read them from the book. And I think this is a beautiful illustration of yielding your personal rights, because there are other alternatives that he had. He could have stopped answering the phone, or he could have changed his number. So, you know, some people might have considered that to be a big annoyance. And so there's other things that he could have done to deal with that. But he willingly gave up whatever rights he thought he had to change his number and his invasion of privacy and the irritation. But he wanted to help those children hear what they were thinking they were going to get when they dialed that number. So when we look at 1 Corinthians chapter 9, we see that the Apostle Paul kind of applies the same type of principle that we're talking about in his life. This looks like chapter 9. It just looks like a big, long digression from the discussion that we had in chapter 8, where Paul talked about eating the meat offered to idols in that section. But really, he has not really moved on from this idol meat question. He's just approaching it from a different direction. And so you could say that he is being kind of crafty here, allowing him to kill two birds with one stone, as we sometimes say. So let's go ahead and read first 14 verses of chapter 9. Paul defending his rights, chapter 9, starting in verse 1. We'll read the first 14 verses and make some comments. Paul says, "Am I not free? Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Are not you my workmanship in the Lord? If to others I am not an apostle, at least I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord. This is my defense to those who would examine me. Do we not have the right to eat and drink? Do we not have the right to take along a believing wife, as do the other apostles and the brothers of the Lord and Cephas? Or is it only Barnabas and I who have no right to refrain from working for a living? Who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard without eating any of the fruit? Or who tends a flock without getting some of the milk? Do I say these things on human authority? Does not the law say the same? For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain. Is it for oxen that God is concerned? Does he not certainly speak for our sake? It was written for our sake, because the plowman should plow in hope, and the thresher thresh in hope of sharing in the crop. If we have sown spiritual things among you, is it too much if we reap material things from you? If others share this rightful claim on you, do we not even more? Nevertheless, we have not made use of this right, but we endure anything rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that those who are employed in the temple service get their food from the temple, and those who serve at the altar share in the sacrificial offerings? In the same way, the Lord commanded that those who proclaim the gospel should get their living by the gospel. So what Paul addressed here in verses 1 through 14 is he addressed the practice of financial support, while at the same time he is addressing this larger argument about the idol meat and the requirements of not putting a stumbling block in somebody else's way. And so, you recall in chapter 8, Paul called upon those who were, quote, strong at Corinth to limit their freedom for the sake of the weak. And in the last verse of chapter 8, verse 13, says, therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never eat meat lest I make my brother stumble. So what he's saying there is, if I need to give up my right to help somebody else, then that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give up my right to help someone else. That he would never eat meat again if it cost one of his brothers or sisters to fall. So that kind of launches here into this rather long discussion of his right as an apostle and his willingness to give up those rights. So it seems that for whatever reason, Paul's authority as an apostle was in question among some people in Corinth. So Paul begins with this assertion of his identity as an apostle. So what he says is that he has seen the risen Lord on the road to Damascus, and he had, in fact, helped start the church in Corinth. And then he lists some of his rights as an apostle. He says, do we have the right to food and drink? And it's a rhetorical question. Yes, it's yes. Do we have the right to take in a believing wife along with us? Does Paul have a right to be married? Yes, he has a right to be married. Do we have the right not to work for a living but to be supported by you? He's saying, yes, we have the right to do that. And so he's asking these questions and making these arguments. And now he turns the picture to offering arguments in support of God's workers being paid. And he uses some examples here to illustrate that. He says, now look at the soldier. You wouldn't expect the soldier to serve at his own expense, that obviously he is going to pay by whoever it is that he's soldiering for, right? He's going to be supported. You wouldn't expect soldiers fighting wars for our country today to pay for their own plane ticket to get to the battleground and pay for their own accommodation, to pay for their own food while they're there. That certainly would not be normal, or it certainly would not be expected at all. Well, that's the point that Paul's making. There are people in certain occupations here that are going to be supported because of what it is they're doing. The person that's representing their country in the war has every right to expect that the country is going to pay for their service and cover their expense. And he also turns his attention to the farmer. You wouldn't expect the worker in the vineyard not to eat some of the grapes. He's going to be able to take advantage of some of what he is doing. And he talks about the shepherd. You wouldn't expect the shepherd not to be able to drink some of the milk from the flock. So he's making this argument, but he's not making it just based on human rationale. There's a spiritual point for it, and he uses spiritual evidence for that in Deuteronomy. He says, look at the law of Moses. And he looks at Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 4. And that passage says, do not muzzle an ox when it is treading out the grain. And then he asks the question, is God really concerned about the ox? Is that why God said this? Is he concerned about the ox, that the ox is going to be muzzled while he's treading the grain? That's not the point of of that statement. That statement is made for us. It's made for our sake, is what Paul is saying. And so his illustration here, he is making an argument for the right to be financially supported for God's workers, for God's workers to be supported. He also uses another illustration, the priest. He says, don't those who work at the temple, under the old law, the priests got their food from the temple, if you recall that. And after something was offered on the altar, did they get to eat some of it? Well, yes, they did. And they know that. So Paul's summary statement here is in verse 14. He says, in the same way, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should receive their living from the gospel. So Paul here has clarified his rights as an apostle. And so the next thing that he is going to say is very interesting, because what he's done here, he's set up everything that he has a right to. That I am an apostle just as much as anybody else is. I have the right to take a wife. I have the right to be supported for my work. And so what's he going to do? He's going to demand his rights. That's exactly the opposite of what he does. If you read on here in verses 12 through 18, we see that Paul is giving up his rights. Chapter 9, starting in verse 12. Nevertheless, we have not made use of this right, but we endure anything rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that those who are employed in the temple service get their food from the temple, and those who serve at the altar share the sacrificial offerings? In the same way, the Lord commanded that those who proclaim the gospel should get their living by the gospel. But I have made no use of any of these rights, nor am I writing these things to secure such provision, for I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of my ground for boasting. If I preach the gospel, that gives me no ground for boasting. For necessity is laid upon me. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this of my own will, I have a reward, not of my own will, while I am still entrusted with a stewardship. What then is my reward? That in my preaching I may present the gospel free of charge, as not to make full use of my rights in the gospel. So Paul here three times maintains that although he has these rights, he's voluntarily not making use of them. So he says in verse 12, but we did not make use of this right. In verse 15, he says, but I have not used any of these rights. In verse 18, and so not to make use of my rights in preaching it. So Paul spent a lot of time talking about himself and what his rights were, but that he was not going to insist on having those rights. So why is Paul saying this? Is Paul saying this so everybody will say, well, Paul, you're such a martyr, and we really appreciate how you're not standing up for your rights, and we know that you deserve to be paid, you deserve these accolades, and you don't want any of that, and you've told us three times that you don't want any of that. So is Paul doing all this to show everybody how sacrificial he is? That's not what Paul is doing. If you remember what we talk about in chapter 8, there's a problem here with people thinking that they can trample all over others while insisting upon, you know, their freedom or their rights to do one thing or another. So what Paul is doing here is kind of foreign to what a lot of people think today. I mean, you don't have to, you know, watch the news very much. You just have to be part of society and hear things today that people think they have all kinds of rights. You know, I'll just use one example. One of the things that has developed these days is people talk about the right to health care. And where did that come from? Why did we all of a sudden think that we have a right to that? You know, that's political discussion, but there are people that feel like that's owed to me. Everything else that I get in my life, I've got to work for and pay for, but the health care I shouldn't have to work for and pay for. And so there are all kinds of examples of things that people think that they have a right to. And Paul, certainly he should know, if he doesn't look out for himself, that nobody else is going to. That's the way a lot of people would think. Paul doesn't have the attitude that many people have, that I'm going to get what is mine. And if I have a right to that, then I am going to get it. What Paul said is, I'm going to give up my rights for the sake of the gospel. Verse 12 says, but we did not use this right. On the contrary, we put up with anything rather than hinder the gospel of Christ. Verse 19, though I am free and belong to no man, I make myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. Verse 23, I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. And as Gary read for us this morning, Philippians chapter 2, verses 5 through 11, Paul told the Philippian brethren that what Jesus did is he gave himself up. He did not demand on having his rights. What would have been the rights of Jesus? Well, Jesus is divinity. Jesus is deity. Jesus did not deserve what he got. But he gave up his position to lower himself to become a servant. He gave up his rights for the sake of others. And of course, we praise God that he did that, because that means that we have the blessing of being a child of God. So Paul is saying, I'm giving up all these rights that I've stated for the sake of the gospel. And Paul is going to live in that way. Let's read on verses 19 through the end of the chapter. For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law I became as one under the law, though not myself being under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share with them in its blessings. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. For every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. For I do not run aimlessly, I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should become disqualified. So Paul says here in verses 19 through 27 that after he stated all these rights that he has, he says, I'm not going to take advantage of those. And the reason that he is going to do that is because he wants to win as many people to Christ as he can. He wants to do that much more than he wants to exercise his rights. So he said to the Jews, he became like a Jew to win Jews. Now, how did he do that? That doesn't mean that he went around teaching the old law, because he knew that we weren't under that anymore. But if there were things that he could do that would be helpful to the Jews, for example, he could have kept a feast day, celebrated a feast day with one of them. Or he could have kept the Sabbath day. It may have been something that he knew that he didn't have to limit himself to do those things, because he knew that he was free under the new law not to have to exercise some of those things. But he did that so that he could win others. Sometimes we can do that. We can do things that will be helpful to others. My father was very good at that, becoming all things to all people when he was trying to teach others. There are things that he was interested in, and if somebody was interested in fishing, he didn't have to try very hard to be interested in that. But if it was something else, I can remember in one city that we lived in, there was a member of the church who was a professional wrestler. And he was not really interested in professional wrestling. And I can remember going to some of those wrestling matches to see that. And it was quite an experience to go to one of those in person. But this person in particular was having some spiritual problems personally and with his family. And my dad wanted to spend time with him. And one of the ways to spend time with him and be effective was to be interested in some of the things he was interested in, and to develop a relationship with him and his family. And so, to the non-wrestler, he became the wrestler. He became interested in things. And so, we do that in order to reach others. And Paul is saying, whatever somebody else is interested in, whatever somebody's background is, I'm going to become all things to all people. I'm going to try to have a relationship with others in the area where I'm not violating God's will, in these areas where, you know, for example, talking about the eating of meat, the point that he's making and has made is that if you feel like you have the right to eat meat, but it's causing somebody else to stumble, then you ought to forfeit that right. You should have more concern about the soul of somebody else more so than you have concern about your rights. And that's what Paul is talking about here, and that's why chapter 9 reflects back on chapter 8. Because this is all going back to, here's, you know, you want to talk about rights, you want to talk about what I could do. Well, here's all the things that I have the right to do, but I'm not, because I'm more interested in serving others and teaching the gospel than I am in asserting my rights to have a wife and to be paid and this and that. So, to become, you know, to the Jews, he became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, he became like one under the law to win those under the law. To the weak, he became weak. And so his point here is that to those who think that they're strong, who want to demand their rights and exercise their freedoms, and really cared little about the weak, Paul's saying that you've got it all wrong. For the sake of the gospel and sake of the salvation of others, you have to be willing to be all things to all men. And so, it's good to not demand your rights. It's good to not destroy your brother or sister when you are trying to demand your rights. That's what Paul does not want to happen. So, what is required to put all this into practice? You know, Paul ends the chapter in saying you have to discipline yourself in order to do this. To put all this into practice, you have to discipline yourself. And he turns to an illustration which was very familiar to the Corinthians. The Isthmian Games, I can't say that, much like the Olympic Games, were held at Corinth every 2 years. And those who competed in those games went into strict training. Just like, you know, we see today when somebody is going to be in the Olympics, you know, they are busy, you know, training, they're and exercising and practicing and eating the right things. And so those who compete in those things, Paul said, they go into very strict training. And the crown that they are awarded for that victory, it's a wreath. It's something that's perishable. It's, you know, it's something that's not going to last. And especially in this illustration, the wreath was literally perishable because the wreath was made of withered celery. Can you imagine? And that's not going to last very long. It's not like the gold medals and things that we have today, which really are perishable in some ways because they are not going to last in eternity, but they last a lot longer than celery. But so Paul hits this point hard. If these athletes push themselves to the limit in training to win, you know, this this pathetic crown of withered vegetables, how much more should we maintain self-discipline for the sake of an imperishable crown? So Paul says, put all this into practice. Discipline yourself. So, you know, what lessons can we learn from this? I want to suggest to you three things that we can learn from what Paul says here. First of all, we need to be willing to sacrifice. Being a mature Christian consists of not only knowing your rights and your freedoms, but being willing to give them up for others. And that's the point that really needs to be seen here in chapter 9. Paul is not setting out to brag about himself and his rights. He's trying to teach others that you need to surrender your rights. You need to be sacrificial. There's a man named Charles Swindoll that's written a lot of books with good illustrations. And he describes it this way, describing a baseball team that's playing a very important game. So imagine this. All the bases are loaded in the bottom of the ninth inning. And you're trailing by one run. And one of the strongest batters comes to the plate. And he looks down at the third base coach and he sees that coach telling him to bunt. And he's thinking, bunt? You know, I'm the strongest hitter on this team. I'm leading the team in hits. I'm going to hit anyway. No one's going to tell me to bunt. I have the right to swing hard for three strikes. And just think what a grand slam would do for me. And the attention that it would get. What would it do for my reputation? So what would you say about that baseball player? So he's only thinking about himself, right? He's thinking about his rights. He's thinking about what would make him look good. He's not thinking about what's best for the team. He's not thinking about the team at all. He's thinking about himself and his stats. And sometimes Christians can have the same kind of attitude. We shouldn't have a selfish attitude. You know, just a lighthearted look at that. I have the right to my favorite pew. I have the right to my favorite teacher. I have the right to my favorite preacher. I have the right to sing my favorite songs. And I want to sing all the old ones. I want to sing all the new ones. I have the right for the service to be shorter. Or I have the right for the service to be longer. Now that's a stretch, isn't it? Nobody would ever argue for that. Or I have the right for people to adopt my ideas. I have the right for people to do things my way. I've been here longer than everybody else. They should do what it is that I want to do. So I just offer those as examples of possible selfish thoughts that may be encountered. But the point is are we willing to sacrifice for the good of others? Or are we the type of people that I'm going to demand my rights, I'm going to demand my freedoms? And Paul's saying that real freedom is exercised in sacrifice, it's exercised in service. And Christians who insist on exercising their right to do whatever they like have really become captive of themselves. You know, they're serving themselves is what I'm saying. They're not serving God. And if we find ourselves campaigning on the platform of demanding our own rights, then Paul's saying that's not what you should be doing. So we should be willing to sacrifice. We also need to learn the importance of discipline. The Christian life is about focus. It's about self-control. It's about training, you could say. That we cannot expect to grow spiritually without putting forth a concentrated effort. You know, it's difficult to learn. And I know that we all wish that we could, when we're in school, that we could put a book under our pillow and we could learn it. And it doesn't work that way. Paul told the Philippians in Philippians chapter 2 to continue to work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and act according to His good purpose. When Paul talked about the games here, he was illustrating the kind of discipline that is required. He said everybody that competes in the games goes into strict training. And he also used the illustration, verse 26 and 27, I don't run like a man running aimlessly. I do not fight like a man beating the air. I beat my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified. So Paul is saying that this is hard for him too. That I am in the business of teaching others, but I'm also trying to practice what I preach. He's trying to discipline himself. Preparation is needed. Ongoing discipline is needed. And he describes this and how he disciplines himself. And so we need to do that too. As I mentioned last Sunday night when we were studying 1 Corinthians 8, that sometimes the more that we read the Bible, the more that we study it, the more that we realize that we don't know. And that tells us that we need to study more. That we need to be involved in more serious reflection upon the Scriptures and embodying those things in our life and using those things to teach others. Those that participated in the games had to know the rules and abide by those. And God gives us the course that He wants us to take. He's told us what it is that we need to do. He's informed us about who the enemy is. He's informed us about what it is that we need to look out for. And we do that by disciplining ourselves. But it's really hard to overemphasize that, because it's so important for us to continue to grow. We're not going to get everything that we need just when we come together here. It takes time. And so Paul says, you need to learn discipline. And finally, he tells us that we need to keep our eyes on the prize. That's the thing that keeps people going in certain situations. You know, there's a lot of people in here that are in college or have gone to college, and I think Rex mentioned this to me recently, and Jarrell's had the same dream, that sometimes you have this dream that you're a credit short of graduation, or that there's some class that you hadn't attended all semester I've got the diploma at the house. I know that I have it, but I keep having these dreams that I don't really have it. You know, it takes work. You have to keep your eye on the goal. You have to know what it is that's before you. You know, simply put, you know, if you're going for a degree, you have to know what's required of it. And then you set out to take those classes that are required for you to get it. And Paul said that I don't get there by boxing aimlessly, even that there's something in front of me that I know what it is that I'm working toward. So the prize has to be kept in clear focus, which is heaven. And that reward of an eternal relationship with God is there, and it's our primary focus in our life. It's something that's unseen, and it's something that's intangible. I can't wrap my head around eternity. That has been something that's been very hard for me. And so that makes it harder for us sometimes to keep that prize in sight, because it's something that we've never seen before. But Paul, he accurately described this challenge of looking toward that heavenly prize in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 through 18. He said, therefore we do not lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. We fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. And so Paul makes the same
type of statement that we can certainly reflect on and relate to, that we have something that's unseen ahead of us that's very important. And he said, and we're just wasting away over time. You know, we outwardly are wasting away, but internally we are refreshed because we keep our eye on the goal. He says, we want to run in such a way as to win the prize and not be disqualified. So what it takes is it takes sacrifice, and it takes being cognizant and of our relationship with others. And so some of the sacrifices that Paul is saying that he's made here are giving up his freedoms and his wants or his rights for the sake of taking others to heaven. And to do that, it requires discipline and it requires concentration on the heavenly goal. So there's some very positive things here for us to follow in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Paul has more to say about this in chapter 10. We'll continue on with the discussion next week. But I hope this will encourage you as you keep your eye on an unseen goal, but a goal that is more important than any goal that you can see, and it's the heavenly goal to be with one another in heaven for eternity, praising God. We can help you in any way to do that. If you have not become a Christian or you started that and haven't been faithful, if we can help you in any way, we encourage you to come while we stand and sing.